Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. So today we're bringing you a very interesting program. Latest in research, you know, because Stephanie and I and the other people who work with the station here, who work with the program, are constantly doing research, sometimes the research overlaps. And we see things that kind of tweak us. They kind of say, wait a minute, how does that work? Like a number of questions we have. Why do some people who are depressed take antidepressants and they don't get better? And some people who take it get better. Is it true that women get depressed more than men get depressed? What's that all about? And why do men have more difficulty with fidelity than women, if it's true? These questions are always kind of sitting around, and we're wondering about it. The other day we were reading a book about the mystical penguins and their fidelity and supposed fidelity, and kind of the book was indicating, you know, this is not really true, that this monogamous relationship stuff is kind of a human invention. But the question is why and what makes it really work. And here's kind of one of the things. Let me just give you an example of it. Let's talk about ADHD or attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, right, which is ADHD. Steph, what happened to ADD alone? Nothing, right? Still there? ADD is still there? They just add the H every now and then?
I think many people have attention deficit disorder without that hyperactive, high-energy component. That's what the difference is between the two.
So the one, thank you. One of the ones we were studying here is when somebody has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and you're married to them, you live with them, what's that like? I think it's true whether it's ADD or ADHD. Either way, if you live with somebody who's got symptoms of distraction, disorganization, forgetfulness, and you could love them, but they're like this. The kind of person who says to you, I'll be right there. And then I'm going to get on the subway, and instead of getting on the subway, they decide to take the bus. And while they're taking the bus, they may stop off and pick something up, and then pick that thing up because they think you're going to like it. They're going to buy you flowers. But you're sit waiting, and an hour later they show up, and you say to yourself, but, you know, you get upset and you get angry. If you have somebody who has a difficulty paying attention, it takes a toll because it gets interpreted as laziness, selfishness, and a lack of love and concern. Some of the experts say that at least 4% of adults have ADD or ADHD and never outgrow it, and that many adults with the disorder were never told that they had the disorder. They just felt wrong. Why don't I concentrate? I've just got to concentrate. I've just got to drink less coffee. You know, I have to. And they criticize themselves all the time. And they feel bad about it, but they don't see it as a disorder. They see it as a matter of discipline, and that they are not disciplined, and they feel bad about it. And then, because it's a symptom of childhood, you know, this is like children tend to have ADD. They're seeing the whole world. So they feel like children, and they feel like everybody's an adult criticizing them. Adults with attention disorders often learn coping skills to help them stay organized and focused at work. But the experts say that many of them struggle at home. So at work, where you have to do a specific thing, you force yourself to do it. This ritual, you know, if you work in a restaurant, you keep track. If you're waiting on tables, you keep track of your billing. You keep track of where you put everything. You put your pen in exactly the same pocket every time because you know you can't afford to not do it. So you organize it there. But at home, the tendency is to become distracted, and it's a constant source of conflict. Some research suggested that the adult is twice as likely to be divorced. Another study found high levels of distress in 60% of the marriages where one spouse had ADD. So if you have the ADD or your mate has the ADD, you got a 60% chance of having a high-stress, uncomfortable marriage. Now, typically, people don't realize that it's the ADD itself, the attention deficit inability to focus, that's impacting on the marriage because there's been no talk at all about it. Melissa Orlov wrote a book called The ADD Effect on Marriage. She said that she began studying attention deficit's toll on relationships after her husband received the diagnosis about 5 years ago. And although she'd been working for years on it, nobody had realized that the disorder was ruining the marriage. She, in her own marriage, Ms. Orlov said, "I felt like he was constantly inconsistent. I could never count on it. It goes from feeling responsible for everything to just chronic anger. We would make a plan for Saturday, and he would make an alternate plan for Saturday. He'd suddenly bring the car in for repair. It isn't forgetfulness. It's the way the brain works. Of course, complaints that a husband or wife is considerate, inconsiderate, or inattentive doesn't help enough around the house, and it hardly limited the marriages when one had the attention problem. Imagine when both have an attention deficit problem. I'm not sure if it works better or worse. Now, when you have this, it could leave one spouse with 100% of all the family responsibility because the other spouse forgets to pick up the children from school, pay the bills on time. Partners without attention problems can feel ignored or unloved when their husband and wife become distracted. You know, there you are waiting in bed and suddenly she wants to go to the computer, right? Because she wants to look up recipes for using turmeric. Well, you know there's a connection there. There is. Oh, there's a connection. I'm not even going to mention it. Anybody who knows that connection, please send it to me on email. Partners without attention problems may feel ignored or unloved when their husband and wife become distracted, hyper-focused on a work project, a computer game. You know, suddenly you got your, because computer games do a funny thing chemically. Computer games take a disorganized mind and it makes it feel safe by getting secretion of certain hormones and neurotransmitters that happen as a result of this activity. You see, a hyperactive brain is like a brain in danger. It's like somebody saying, there's a danger, I got to find a solution. I got to find something. Something has to be found, and I'm going to find it. When you put that person on a computer where they have a kill zone, where they have something that they could attack, where they have a target, it helps them focus, and their brain chemistry actually works better. People with attention deficit disorder love computer games. They love to do things that are ritualistic and that have some end result. They may feel they'll no choice. So now what do you do if you're the partner of somebody who's playing computer games? You constantly nag them to get things done. So then what also happens is the mate is unaware of the latest mistake that he made or thing he forgot. And he gets confused by the partner's simmering anger. They get upset. And what do they do when they get upset? They retreat to their computer or their video game, further infuriating their spouse. It's not because they're lazy or they don't love their spouse, but it's because they're distracted. It's because their mind just moves away. This is not as much a psychological problem as it is almost a hardware problem. You know, it's not just in your mind. It's not just you were a kid, and when you were a kid, your parakeet, you know, said something that you didn't like. It's not early childhood damage. It's so chemical. And nobody understands that. So nobody puts the kind hand on the person who's got the ADD with an understanding. But of course, if you choose to love them, live with them, and get angry at them, that's your drama. Because what are you picking them for? Right? If you can't stand it, don't be with it. But if you can't stand it, if you can, and you get something out of it, maybe it's worth it. I mean, ADD. Look at Jackson Pollock. He's using ADD to its best, right? I'd go, phew. What do you want to do when you got somebody like that? You want to say, don't be so creative? Some of the most creative people in the world have attention deficit disorder. Now, not very few, many are successful, because usually you can't market whatever you sell, because you get too disorganized to do it. But if you're a real genius, you get somebody who markets it for you. You get somebody who comes over and says, okay, just make some more of those, and we'll bring them outside and sell them on Washington Square. Now, although the treatment for this often starts with medication, it doesn't solve the problem. Sometimes you got to have a talk therapy. And in a talk therapy, one of the ideas is to try to get, number one, a compassionate understanding where both people see the problem as theirs. This ADD is us, because we're both living with it. And we have to approach it in a certain way. So if you have a friend who has a jacket and the friend says, I've got to bring my jacket along, and you see your friend getting involved in packing up the pistachio nuts all of a sudden, or repacking, or doing or dividing them up, you gently would say, and, you know, it's good that we take the jacket with us too, understanding that this is going to happen. One of the biggest challenges is for both spouses, plural of spouse, to accept the very real toll an attention disorder can take. Initially, I was skeptical about it, but I tell you, the more I see, the more I believe. It's about nagging. It kind of almost elicits nagging in your partner. You know, and it gets to a point where you just begin to hate them. Hatred very often is a result of one person with ADD and another person who's angry because you've got it and doesn't understand it.
Armand, I also think it sets up a dynamic of the parent-child. Very often I hear that over and over again with people that actually go through this very thing. They say, you know, I feel like I'm the parent and I'm with basically a teenager or a child, and they cannot, you know, really be an equal partner, it feels like, for the spouse that doesn't have the ADD. So it's a chronic thing, and it's very difficult if the person with ADD has that whole kind of anosognosia, the thing we describe often, that's just that form of, in the brain, it causes denial. You really do not think that you have a problem. So it's difficult when you don't have the awareness in yourself if you have this kind of brain functioning, we'll call it.
Armand Mill here with Stephanie Dombra. Yes, Stephanie, you know, and one of the things, that's where therapy works. That's where counseling really helps, especially when the counselor understands the brain chemistry of it as well. You know, when the counselor sits, if they were to sit with you, for example, you would say, okay, let's look at this. Here is the way it works. Here's the way this chemistry works.
Sometimes therapists that understand this say, okay, tape the conversations, or even videotape what's going on, little segments, so that you can provide feedback to the person that's not able to see themselves or hear themselves go through this whole thing. I mean, there's big stuff when you have to live with someone that has an entire room that is completely disorganized. I have seen the marriages break up. I've seen marriages where people are trying to work hard on it, and I've seen where it's virtually impossible for the person if they're a basically neat person and the other person has like a room where everything is totally disorganized, or it makes the entire house where every room feels like that. It can be very frustrating and unsettling for the spouse without it.
Yeah, unless the spouse says, but that's how I work out every day. I pick up the clothing, you know, and they turn it into, that's my exercise. Yes, I understand. My husband is always dropping things everywhere, and everywhere you look, he's dropped clothes on the floor, and I pick them up. And that's okay. I consider it my exercise because I understand that's the way his brain works.
Right.
And there's a way of working. Now, let's take a look at another thing. I want to look at a new aspect of infidelity and commitment. Right? Another piece of information that came our way. Why do some men and women cheat on their partners while others resist the temptation? To find the answer, a growing body of research is focusing on the science, believe it or not, of commitment. They're beginning to find that there are biological factors that influence marital stability to a person's psychological response after flirting with a stranger. Their findings suggest that while some people may be naturally more resistant to temptation, men and women can also train themselves to protect their relationship and raise the feeling of commitment. So here's what they find. You have a commitment in a relationship. Somebody else comes along. How do you respond to that somebody else? Recent studies have raised questions about the genetic factors. Hasse Wollum, a biologist at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, I was just there, studied 552 sets of twins to learn more about a gene related to the body's regulation of the brain chemical vasopressin. Now, vasopressin is one of the bonding hormones. Overall, men who carry a variation of the gene were less likely to be married. The variation of the gene. Some have the regular gene, you're okay. But there is a certain variation that men who had this variation of the gene were less likely to be married. And those who had wed were more likely to have serious marital problems and unhappy wives. Now, that's kind of wild, isn't it? You look at somebody's genetic structure, you see this vasopressin variation on a gene, and you say, hey, you're going to have a tough time, kid. You can find it out when the kid's like, you know, 2 years old. Relationships, they're going to be tough because you've got this other gene. Among men who carry two copies of the gene variant, about a third had experienced a crisis in a relationship, and double the number seen in men who did not carry the variant. Double the number. So it was twice as much as the men who had no variant at all. Well, there's genetic differences that influence commitment. The studies do, however, say the brain, even if you have this variant, can be trained to resist temptation. Now, this is a training through discipline. This is not like we were talking about before with a parent disciplining a child. There was an unusual study at McGill University. They looked at how people in a committed relationship react in the face of temptation. In one study, highly committed men and women were taken to rate the attractiveness of people of the opposite sex in a series of photos. Not surprisingly, they gave the highest ratings to people who would be viewed as attractive. Later, they were shown similar pictures and told the person was interested in meeting them. In that situation, participants consistently gave those pictures lower scores than they had the first time around. That was odd. When they were attracted to someone who might threaten the relationship, they seemed instinctively to tell themselves, he's not so great. Something in them turned off if they thought the person was responsive to them. The less attractive you find other people who threaten your relationship, the less attractive. You become less attracted to people who threaten your relationship. But some of the McGill research has shown gender differences in how they respond. It doesn't really predict it in the outside world, but it did show that men who had just been flirting, well, that the men, some men were much more responsive to flirting and invasion of their relationship, and women were some, and other men were not. Men who had been flirting were very unforgiving of anybody's flirting behavior. They are, so they would be unforgivingly angry if they were, these are the ones who are susceptible at the person who flirted with them. It's almost like you're turning me on, you're tempting me, and I hate you for it. I can't stand you. So they get angry. So one of the things that you generally see is men who get angry at women. It's because they're tempted. I mean, that makes sense, of course. The other thing is about women. And women, of course, it's not just the attractiveness. With women, it's the threat. With women, seeing another person in there, they have a threat to the security. This, according to these studies, there's a threat to the security of my relationship if I am attracted to another man. So I will turn off because I am attracted, because it's a threat to my own security. But they said there's a better answer to all of this. A concept of Arthur Aaron. You know Arthur Aaron. Stony Brook University. Good guy. How much does your partner provide a source of exciting experiences to you? How much knowing has your partner made you better? Knowing your partner has made you better. How much have you seen your partner as a way to expand your own capabilities? Three big questions. How much has knowing your partner made you a better person? Think about your mate. Think about your husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend. How has that person offered you some exciting experiences? And how do you see that person as a way to expand your own capabilities? The Stony Brook University research has conducted experiments, and couples were given mundane tasks while others took part in a silly exercise in which they were tied together, asked to crawl on mats. The study was so rigged for the couples failed the limit the first two times. Those who had taken part in the challenging activity posted greater increase in love and relationship satisfaction than those who had not experienced anything. So here's what it has to say. You have a way of getting past anything, including the infidelities, including the temptations, including the lack of commitment. You want to provide a source of exciting experiences for your partner. Yep. You want to do that. I don't care if it's food, travel, walking, people. Make it exciting. Knowing your partner in some way should make you a better person, not a worse person. The two of you can't sit around and complain about somebody all day long. You've got to grow. You've got to grow. You've got to evolve. Evolving is such an important thing. And you could do that better with a partner than you could do alone. And then your partner has to help you expand your own capacities. You have to become a bigger person, just yourself. So if you're a writer, you become a better writer. if you're a worker, you become a better worker. If you're a builder, you become a better builder. That your partner takes the qualities that you have as well and helps you in some way become a better person. So think back. You're a better person now than you were 7.5 years ago. Did you have more excitement than you did 7.5 years ago? Are you a better person? Are your capacities increased? Your capabilities increased? Your reach? Those are the questions. So those are some of the things that we've been playing with, my friends, and we're going to be taking your calls. We've learned a little more, too, about serotonin that is just mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. Just a quick note here, and then we're going to take your calls when we get back from our break. But a quick note is that they found that serotonin itself, which you must learn about, period, because it's such an important thing. But serotonin, when it drops, what is it if you give somebody antidepressants, why don't they get better? Turns out that there are people who have serotonin receptors, and they're different receptors. These receptors, if you have too many of the receptors or different receptors, it does not work. So your serotonin and somebody else's serotonin is not working the same way, and male serotonin functions different than female serotonin. For example, if a man gets a drop in serotonin, he becomes impulsive, and he feels an impulsivity. If a woman feels a drop in serotonin, she gets depressed, and she starts to get depressed. Now, the man never feels depressed, but he does feel impulsive, and he starts acting in ways. The woman becomes guarded and irritable with the drop in serotonin. So now put these two people in the same room, and let's say they both have a drop in serotonin. Now what do you have? You have a guy who is being impulsive. He has a short temper. He can't stand anything. And he's got a mate who is depressed and irritable. When you look at it, what you're really looking at is kind of a chemical mess. Everything we think is just purely psychological, and the reason is this because of the way you spoke to me and so on and so forth. Those reasons go out the window as you begin to understand that our chemicals are playing such a strong part in our body. And it's not that anything we could, I'm not saying you should take natural supplements or you should do anything about it, but understanding it makes such a difference. And it's such an act of love to do a true, complete understanding of your own and your partner's chemistry. Hey, what? You know, lovers love to understand each other's chemistry. That's what sex is about, right? So why won't we go further than that? This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little special music, and then we will continue. We'll be right back.
It's such a crazy, crazy
deep into the funnel of love, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI. That's Wanda Jackson. The funnel of love. Isn't that cute, like funnel cakes? My funnel, F-U-N-N-E-L. So we're talking about some of the things that affect us in relationships. And, of course, we go by thinking, you know. He said, she said, you said, I accuse you and you blame you and I blame you and blame, blame, blame. And then everybody's blaming everybody and everybody's yelling at everybody. And it's and you just don't get through anything. And a lot of it is just one invisible mess. We have no idea what's going on. I mean, I remember when I used to see some of the studies where they would take an ant family and they would put a sound on the outside of the ant. What do you call those things? Ant farms? I was reading about something about the man who invented the ant farm. He made millions and millions of dollars because he had this idea of making an ant farm and started selling it. And people bought it. Everybody had one. So he had, so ant farms, you look at them and you watch the way people respond. Well, there are some major ant farms that are studied. They played some music on the outside. And if you played something like the tunnel of love, the funnel of love, the ants would respond differently. And they would move differently and they'd get different twigs and they'd mate differently just from the music. Well, we know that we all mate differently just from the music, right? I mean, that's why you've got to have Chopin or whatever it is that makes you mate differently. But the problem becomes you don't know what it is that's running you. You don't know it's the music. You don't know it's the sunlight. You don't know it's the vitamins in your body. You don't know it's your neurochemicals. You don't know it's your neurotransmitters. And you don't know if you're just running some old program from being damaged psychologically as a child. You don't know. It's so much information, it makes you crazy. And then you try to figure it out. Our telephone number here, by the way, is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We will be taking your calls in just a second. So it's very weird to be trying to figure yourself out. And when it gets down to this serotonin and the effect of serotonin has, it's just amazing. Some studies, Lowry has found that there are multiple types of serotonin neurons, multiple types of them, so you can't just depend on one. And now they found that there are serotonin receptors in the amygdala. There are two types. One makes you feel better, the other makes you feel worse. So we just haven't figured it out here, friends. What we thought was just, well, increase the serotonin. Increase the serotonin is absolutely wrong. Stop the uptake. What is it? Serotonin reuptake inhibitor, right? You got to stop it from losing it. It's all theory. An initial wave of serotonin increases fear-like behavior in mice, while a second wave makes them more peaceful and loving. Is that why we go to horror movies? Do we go there so that we can get a peak in our serotonin, then a drop in our serotonin, and the combination of the two make us feel better? That's why we want to go on a roller coaster. Does anybody understand why humans want to go on roller coasters and feel so good afterwards? Because you're playing with your chemistry. Because you're playing with it, because you're looking for something. And when someone says to you, what do you like about dancing so much? You say, it's fun. But no, it's setting your body in motion, and it's setting up a chemical charge for you to live on. It's your juice. 212-209-2900. So how does this, all this information affect you and your relationships? That's a question. We don't have as many chances to be taking your calls as we'd like to. See, tomorrow we're doing an interview. On Wednesday we're doing an interview. On Thursday we're doing an interview. And then next week following that, we're going to have a mini fun drive here on WBAI. I will not be with you that Tuesday. I will be with you on Wednesday for 2 hours. And a mini fun drive because we're going to keep WBAI strong and we're getting a couple of quarts of serotonin to drink, too. Let's take one of your calls, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Okay, I was trying to turn my radio down. I got it.
Thank you.
This is an excellent program, and I wanted to know what's coming up to my mind is there a connection? You spoke about ADD and ADHD, and you also spoke about the affairs, you know, not being committed to the relationship. Is there a connection with the two?
Well, all right, think about it. You know the answer.
Well, I've seen it in my family.
Yeah, sure. What have you seen?
Well, in the males, more than the females, who really struggle with ADD and ADHD, and also struggle with not being able to stay committed. I mean, they stay, for the most part, in their relationship, although that's not true either. And then they have this problem. They struggle with both areas a lot.
So who was it? Was it your dad?
My father.
Yeah.
My brother, my sons.
So they may have this gene. They may have this little genetic thing going on where they can't stay with one person,
mm-hmm.
which is part of what they said. Now, of course, it says you can't overcome this, but that's a possibility among them. But seeing it with your father, I'm going to tell you something I know about you. The discovery that your father had a woman other than your mother must have hurt you a terrible amount.
I think I was so confused because he was also alcoholic, so I'm sure it did. But at the same time...
So your dad had nothing you could depend on. He's an alcoholic. You can't really depend on him.
And actually, everybody else that I just mentioned in my family, they are also alcoholics. I don't know if that's a connection with the ADD or the ADHD.
Well, it's Stephanie, that is a chemical bond, isn't it?
I think what happens is people medicate. That's what they've often said when you're with these kind of brain kind of chemistries that are not fully functioning, you use different sources outside of yourself, whether it's food, sex, alcohol, drugs. That's pretty common.
It's wacky. See, you feel wacky. You feel crazy. You feel driven. And when you feel driven, what you want to do is calm down. Grab a cigarette. No, that doesn't do any good. Okay, masturbate, which is an early male solution for being anxious. And then if that doesn't work as well, and for a lot of men, you know, having relationships is in effect that. It's masturbation because they're really just trying to feel some kind of a pleasure release. And then on the other hand, it's like just do anything. Drink. Calm down. Get drunk. Fall asleep. But it all starts off with this rampant chemistry inside. We're trying to just change it.
And so some of them are in AA.
It helps.
So they're not drinking anymore, but they're still struggling with the same stuff.
Yep. I fully understand. I fully understand. And the people in AA don't truly understand it as well.
Right.
You see what I mean? I mean, the people in AA are just simply saying, look, we don't know what caused it. Here's what we find as a solution. Now, AA does a very interesting thing. They realize without even realizing, or I realize what they realize without them knowing that they do it. Part of what's missing is feeling safe. So when you are an alcoholic or you have ADHD or ADD, you feel in danger all the time. And somebody who's hyperactive is acting like somebody who's in danger. They're like a little titmouse, you know. They're like a deer. They're moving all over the place. Safety is a tremendous factor. In their own family, they can't find it because the safety in the family are people blaming them, getting mad at them, telling them to control themselves, making them feel bad, nagging them. So they don't feel safety there. So they feel safety in a bar. They feel safety with liquor. But an AA meeting is amazing because it provides safety. And it gives you a feeling that you could sit down with a group of friends or people, and it's okay. You're all in it together. Now, that family feeling sets off a different chemistry that I think counteracts the feeling of danger. So I think it works very, very well for people. But you have all the other issues to deal with, too. And when one sedative goes away, you know, and you're still unstable in your mind, you go tend to move towards the other sedative. You know, and if that's sex or something like that, it's what people do. And I'm sorry for you and the pain that you've had to go through your entire life, because what you're saying about you is you've never been safe yourself.
Right. I never understood that until you just said this.
Did you ever feel safe?
No, never.
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 Even now, so were you married?
Pardon?
Were you married, single?
Yes. But it didn't make any difference.
It didn't make a difference. Well, okay, thank you very much for calling in. Thank you. We're going to have to go. 212-209.
Next caller, please.
Hello,
Armand?
Yes.
How are you?
Fine.
This is Tony from the Bronx.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. You know, I had an interesting thought. I'm in a relationship for, 7 years, right? And, we have no major problem, except other than the fact that, it's kind of like, that honeymoon period kind of slowed down a bit. And I had this really weird thought that there's nothing wrong, basically. And I think out of fear, a lot of people right at that moment would cheat. Because it's easier to blow it up and for me to mess it up rather than to be dumped. The fear of being dumped, I think would push a lot of people to cheat. So that way they could walk around saying, oh yeah, I messed it up, it's me, kind of like a badge of honor, I cheated and I messed up my marriage. It's easier to say than cheat on me because I was boring. Does that make any sense?
I hear. Yes, it does make a lot of sense. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Well, we just got a little technical mix-up over here, and I'm gonna have to pull back for a minute. Tony, I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to end this call, and I'm gonna have to check something. And I'll be right back, okay? Everybody stay with me. Hard. We thought we had it perfect. But unfortunately, not so. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a call, let the caller ask me a question, and then we'll drop the caller right away. And I'll try to respond if I can. How might that work, Michael? Give that a try. 212-209-2900. See if just by asking the question we don't get the loop. We're in some kind of a feedback loop. This is Armando Mill with you with the positive mind. What do you think, Michael? You think there's one up there? No.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi there. Hello there.
Well, hello.
Yes.
Hi, Armand.
Hi.
Okay. I'll try to phrase this differently because I kind of wanted to have a two-way conversation, but that's fine. I've been living married, actually, to a woman that I think has ADD for about 25 years, and it's really tough because I'm always angry.
Oh, you see, there it is.
That's it.
All right, can't do it. I'm sorry, my friends. My friends, we got to give up sometimes with the callers, so let's talk about it. So let's talk about relationships, and let's talk about what the meaning of relationships are, and what's your commitment, and what's your tolerance, and how far can you go? You know, it's a real question. The real question is, how far can you go with somebody? How far? I mean, how much do you want to be with somebody? Do you want to be with somebody who's got, well, a physical illness? There's one thing. Of course, if you've been in a relationship living with each other for a long period of time and somebody gets sick, you're likely to want to stay in there and say, look, I love you, I'll support you, even though I know it cuts off half my life. Meaning that, you know, I've got to be with you one way or another. So that's one aspect. But, you know, sometimes you don't trade for that. Sometimes you don't bargain for that. Sometimes you don't say to yourself, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get with somebody who has this problem. Well, very often people select people who have obvious problems right at the beginning, and you choose the person with the problem, and then after a period of time you blame them for having the problem. You blame them, you get angry at them, and you say it's their fault that they have this, but you know, you bought it came with the turf. Interesting thing about relationships, they evolve over time. Now, if you have two people who are of the highest integrity and the highest intention, they can feel all of these problems and they could go through them together. They could deal with them on a higher level as long as they make sure they're keeping their integrity and their intention intact. But it can't be done with a demand. It can't be done with one person saying, this is the way it has to be. It just can't be. And here's the sorry news sometimes, my friends. Sometimes you just realize we can't make it. Sometimes you realize, you say to yourself, you know, this is just not going to work. And when you say that, it's a very, very, very sad thing. But sometimes it's what you come down to. And then you give up. And when you give up and you say to your partner, we can't make this. I can't make this any better than it is. I don't like the way it gets. I don't like the way we are. When you get to that point and you separate, it's painful. But some people never want to separate. They say, we'll stay together anyway. And they stay together saying, it's not going to work, but we'll stay together because it's better to have a partner than nobody at all. Okay. It's a deal. A woman told me earlier today about how her mother stayed with her abusive father because he was big. And mom always used to talk about how she needed to have a big man around the house because she was afraid. And she was somebody who lived with a perpetual kind of fear. And she wanted to have somebody big around the house, just like a protector. So even though he was abusive and an alcoholic and all that, she settled for it. That's what she said. All right, that's your choice. My choice is freedom for you. And my choice is that you examine what you have, look at it, try to make it work as best you can. Try everything you've got. And then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Time to go. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Sorry for any of the difficulties, but we will be back with you tomorrow with better intention and better work. Speak to you then.